Whisper in the Galaxy the Extraterrestrial Truth. What you don't know. This thread is for the truth seekers. Can you handle the truth? Do you really want to learn the truth about ETs? Would it be hard for you to discover that our intelligence level as a human being is nothing more than an animal would be to us, in comparison to most extraterrestrials visiting the planet? Have you thought to yourself how could ETs possibly hide their existence from mankind for so long if they really do exist? Has the thought ever crossed your mind, how much farther advanced could ETs really be? Though our human minds literally cannot yet grasp the concept of their true nature coming from a higher dimensional reality as they can exist outside and inside our third dimension, at least we can have a small peek into what their world is like, at least from a third dimensional human perspective. Thanks to ATS members Alex DJ and Space Visitor, I have been trying to put together my experiences for a very long time now and have struggled to even put down on paper everything I have experienced with ETs and on board various spacecraft. Unlike many others, I have been allowed to remember some of my experiences and be fully conscious of all surrounding. The hardest part is describing and explaining the surroundings and the things I experienced, but thanks to Alex DJ and Space Visitor who sent me YouTube use telling me some of my thoughts are similar to another poster's experiences. I just finished reading two documents written by this person about ETs and their ships and can tell you this is exactly the way ETs and their ships are. I couldn't have explained or put it down on paper any better than this person did. In this light, I have decided to direct you to these documents that describe to the best of anyone's ability what ETs are really like and what ET ships are really like. You won't find these descriptions anywhere else. I have read many books on the subject out there for a long time now, but they have not come close to the detail and descriptions found in these documents. For the truth seekers and those who are wondering how much farther advanced ETs really can be, well, this is your chance to actually get a rough draft idea. Before you read this, I will just say that this will all seem like a fairy tale to some because ET technology, if you could even really call it that, operates interdimensionally and is like a living organism that is alive to us in the third dimension. You really need to drop the illusion of this world and reality with a clean open mind in order to hear the truth, because it is that far out there and will sound undoubtedly unbelievable. Neil Armstrong wrote, "Those who can remove one of the truth's protective layers. There are places to go beyond belief. Our third dimensional reality or the world we live in is a layer of the truth that Neil Armstrong speaks about. It is an illusion that if we could only remove part of, we truly could go to places beyond belief, as he so eloquently put it. If we could see past our physical human eye and access other realities, we could understand that all third dimensional laws can in fact be broken. Remove the laws of physics, science, and the world as there are no limitations, only illusions. Hard to believe? I'm right there with you. ETs have the capability of breaking all third dimensional laws as we know them by changing matter and manipulating time and space from other dimensions. Can we fly like Superman? Never say never. So if you really want to know about ETs, then you need to read this document that gives you a small peek into the interdimensional world of extraterrestrials. The first part of the document gives a brief description of Roswell. If you're already familiar with that story, well, I suggest you skip down a little bit and continue reading. Keep in mind, whether this story is true or not, I could never tell you or vouch for it. It may be written as a screenplay to keep the reader's attention. What I can vouch for is that everything written and said about ET's capabilities and their ships in this document is true. I have experienced some of these things for myself, among other things that I plan to later share. Here it is. Click ufo.blogspot.com. P.S. I will be sharing my ET experiences of traveling into space on this thread eventually, as I am still in the process of writing them down, but I will leave out the unexplainable that I experienced inside and outside of ET ships, because I don't really know how to put it all down on paper. In fact, I don't think it's even possible. I have decided to just come out and share my experiences regardless of what people think, and I expect to be hammered and flamed for it all as usual here on ATS, but that is okay. I will answer everyone's questions anyway. I want people to understand that I have read many contact stories out there and only a very few give the slightest clue and reality of what ETs and their ships really are like, so I feel I owe it to at least try and get some information out to those diligently seeking the truth. If I ever write a book on all of my experiences, I will place it online, free of charge of course, for whoever chooses to download. Whether people believe me or not, at least I put it up there for someone to read and consider. If you have any questions, feel free to ask. Peace. Dot. Thursday, June 19, 2008, in League with a UFO by Lou Bolden. On that day, messengers shall go forth from me in ships. Ezekiel 30-9. Contents: alien documents. 9. UFO crash. 15. Cover up. 18. Strange life forms inside the ship. 24. Disappearing act. 31. Psychics attempt to unlock the mysteries. 33. Alien medical instruments. 45. Layers added to shield the president. 54. Pandora's box. 58. Spontaneous combustion. 65. Alien cover up. 72. Power of the intangibles. 76. Biodegradable alien gadgets. It's 82. Technology, where does it come from? 85. Alien contact. 90. Civilians used for experimentation. 95. The myth of human autonomy. 97. Second encounter. 104. Envy stymies the committee. 108. Gift of knowledge. 112. Meat market. 116. The journey. 131. Primed for a mission. 137. Clones. 142. Back from Utopia. 144. Prologue. The flying disc recovered in Roswell, New Mexico, in 1947 is one of many contacts with extraterrestrial life forms humans have had in the last century and this new century. Roswell gets the bulk of the interest because it was initially reported by personnel in the United States government to a worldwide audience. Days after, an officer from the Army Air Force released the news that an alien ship crashed in a field near Roswell, New Mexico. A substantial amount of repudiation of the story poured out from military headquarters debunking the original account. However, not everyone could be silenced. For some of the individuals, those that experienced the phenomena firsthand, the cover-up did not alleviate their new paranormal realities. During that period, many of the people touched by the extraterrestrial affair, like the nurses, doctors, scientists, and military personnel, the people with first-hand knowledge, suddenly lost interest in telling their stories. Those people had been debriefed on the consequences should they talk about what they saw and experienced in Roswell in 1947. Much of what leaked out in the last 3 decades came from such people who had previously sworn secrecy their involvement while employed by the newly developed covert society. These people lived most of their lives working in clandestine laboratories set up in several places around the world. Some of the scientists in such programs had physical contact with aliens and alien technologies that were discovered inside the salvaged alien spaceship at Roswell. A few of these people eventually wrote books describing some of the things they worked around, but for the fantastic nature of their claims, few believed them. Others, with more profound information and fearful of losing credibility, careers, and even their life, had no interest in going public. Some remained quiet out of duty to country. Most of these people have gone to their graves, taking their alien secrets with them. But not all secrets were taken to the grave. Some remained hidden in dusty attics and damp basements, stored away under old magazines and books inside boxes, awaiting discovery. Much of this material was never found, and like countless other historical documents throughout the ages, has been lost to posterity, never to be viewed by human eyes again. No one will ever know how much secret information from that and other covert projects made it to the landfills, but some journals have surfaced after the authors have passed away. When I first wrote in League with a UFO, I did not want to be associated with the UFO phenomena and was not sure how to put the information out without admitting my personal experiences. So I put the manuscript away for 2 years before revisiting it again and publishing the manuscript. Unbeknownst to me at the time was that my book would come out in print 2 weeks before the 50th anniversary of the Roswell crash. My publisher informed me of that fact and suggested that I should take advantage of the crowds that would converge in Roswell, New Mexico on July of 1997, to sell my books. I declined and my book remained for the most part unknown for nearly 10 years after publication. A few books were purchased and in the second year one was invited to a filming of a documentary concerning UFOs and again I declined publicity for the book. I did however do a couple of radio shows which netted me a few book sales. How I came to have this information is as strange as the information itself. I was a home builder at the time with no desire to write and little if any writing ability to boot. I received a call one day and was invited to have lunch by an individual I did not know. I often met with clients and suppliers who I did business with and didn't give it much thought when I accepted the invitation. I met with this fellow at an upscale restaurant and we never once talked about construction, which should have been odd, but for some reason it was not. During our conversation he handed me some papers that he took from his briefcase and showed them to me. I can't to this day recall what we talked about or what was on those papers, but not long after that day I began to write down the material that is now in this book. In League with a UFO, second edition UFO crash. The year was 1947, the place Roswell, New Mexico. On July 2nd, of that year, reports of a bright disc streaming across the sky were made by some of the townspeople to the local authorities. The unidentified flying object, UFO, fell from the sky and crashed approximately 75 miles northwest of town that day. A rancher or farmer that heard the crash and had thought that an airplane had fallen into a field a short distance from the house he was living in, investigated. What he found at the scene was nothing he could relate to and it certainly didn't look to him like it was from this world. He was so mystified about what he saw that he didn't report it until 5 days later, on July the 7th when he went into town for some other business. He told some friends that the craft was made of a strange material that had no weight to it, yet seemed to have incredible strength. Years later some of the material found at the crash site was equated to looking like aluminium foil. Coincidentally, aluminium foil was invented that year, 1947. However, aluminium foil is easily damaged and destroyed, unlike the material from the alien ship. Once the news spread about the rancher's claim of finding a UFO, the excitement mixed with apprehension, thoughts of an alien invasion, spread throughout the town like a brush fire. It was not long after the rancher showed the crash site to one of the military officers that the rancher suddenly became silent on the topic and spoke no more about it. He refused to discuss what he had found with the media or his friends. Nevertheless, the news was out and it quickly traveled around the country and the world as the press corps inundated that small New Mexico town. Ironically, much of what is known all about the UFO crash was released to the media by a public relations officer from the Army, Air Force, the same people that later denied it. A military officer told the press that a flying disc had crashed and that the Army, Air Force did recover it. In 1947 the Army and the Air Force was one branch. From that statement, people from all over the world wanted to know more. Some of the talk around town focused on topics that questioned the very nature of man's existence. What if we are not alone in the universe? Was this crash proof that other life forms did exist? And if so, what a scary thought that was. Those were some of the concerns talked about. Orson Welles' War of the Worlds of a few years earlier, in 1938, was still on the minds of many of the town folks. That alleged alien crash implied that a real alien invasion could be imminent. There was anxiety mixed in with the excitement. Those were dire implications to that possibility and the government soon realized it was not in a position to answer the queries and concerns coming at them by the potentially panic-provoking reporters. Not knowing what the army had in its possession and at the same time attempting to halt what had turned into a media circus of paranoia, the military retracted its earlier statement about a flying disc and blamed the misunderstanding to a misinformed lower-ranking officer. The military's new report simply stated that a new kind of weather balloon that was being tested in the nearby military base is all that was recovered from the now famous Roswell crash. The crash of a weather balloon was much easier to swallow than aliens from space and a lot less frightening for the public at large. Few people doubted the military's explanations and welcomed them, and the public quickly forgot the whole matter. Cover-up. The top brass in the military was unable to give the President of the United States any details of what they had in their possession, other than it did appear to be extraterrestrial and not of this world. That was enough information for the President to make the decision to keep the whole affair a secret until further notice. A secret committee was formed with the sole intention of studying the alien craft. It was put under the jurisdiction of the Air Force and received its funding from them. The committee operated under the pretext of integrating new technologies to develop better maneuverability and faster flying military aircraft, top secret stuff. The facility is located near the Nevada-Arizona border and is popularly known as Area 51. It was one of the most hush-hush bases in the country until sometime in the 70s. That's when UFO buffs began mentioning it in their meetings, and the media started writing about it in newspapers and magazines. Information about UFOs came from a multitude of sources. From the average citizen that reported to the media that they had seen aircraft perform fantastic feats of maneuverability near military bases and at Area 51, and professionals that claimed what they saw defied all concepts of what military aircraft, or any aircraft, was capable of doing without breaking apart. Moving diagonally while traveling at a high rate of speed was one of the more bizarre instances reported. Other sources or leaks came from former military personnel who worked at certain bases and spoke under the condition that their names would not be used. Area 51 remains a top secret facility, but everyone knows its whereabouts. It now serves more as a decoy, keeping the public focused on that one place and away from other concealed operations across the country, according to a document. The military had in its possession a flying machine so advanced and mysterious that some of the scientists involved in the program speculated that it could only be from other dimensions. Or that the alien ship was capable of traveling from one dimension to another as a means to traverse the vastness of our Milky Way galaxy. The craft was like a living organism, claimed a document in one of the secret files. When the ship was first recovered, there was a large hole on one side of it, presumably caused by an internal explosion. Perhaps a leaky antimatter type component of the craft was one theory. The explosion annihilated a large portion of the ship. The actual size of the alien craft was not found in the documents. Miraculously, 3 weeks after the craft was discovered, the ship completely healed, repaired itself. To say the least, it was a very mysterious event, since the craft was monitored 24 hours a day and no alien work crew materialized to perform the work. If aliens did repair the ship, they were either invisible or the aliens rendered the guards unconscious and implanted false memories into their minds. The scientists that monitored the craft reported that the healing occurred similar to a human flesh wound, which heals within a few days with the help of blood platelets from the human body. The skin or surface of the ship simply grew back over a period of 3 weeks. In reality, there is no similarity to the human immunology and that of the ship's own ability to heal. Had a human suffered an equivalent trauma, nothing would have grown back and the human would have died. At the end of the 3 weeks, there was no sign that the ship had been damaged, no scar, and the color match where the hull had been broken blended flawlessly with the undamaged part of the ship. The debris from the explosion covered several acres of land with material that had the appearance and consistency of aluminium foil, except that aluminium foil remains crumpled when crumpled. The alien material bounced back without a wrinkle. Because the craft repaired itself, the scientists investigating it were unable to determine the cause of the crash. But the size of the hole led them to believe that it had to be an internal explosion and not the crash that caused the damage. The material the ship was made of was indestructible by human standards. After studying the material and its strength, they came to the conclusion that anything earthly could not harm the ship in any way, nor cause the slightest damage to it, including that of a lightning strike, one of the original theories on what caused the saucer to crash. Of the three aliens that were recovered from the craft when it was found, one was dead and two were alive. The three aliens were removed from the ship at the time of its recovery and taken to an undisclosed location. The secret committee in possession of the alien craft had no knowledge of the whereabouts of the aliens, and at that time were unconcerned. They had plenty on their plate with the alien ship and the mysterious cargo that was in it. Several months passed before the scientists felt comfortable working inside of the alien craft. Entering it was like walking into a time warp. All sense of reality vanished. Wristwatches did not operate inside the alien craft, and neither did any of the five physical human senses. Things smelled differently or not at all while in the ship. Body odor lost its pungency. However, the food they brought into the ship gave off an offensive odor, as if it was rancid, making it inedible while in the ship. Perfume and cologne was undetectable until they stepped out of the ship and the nose once again picked up on the scent. From the experiments with food, the scientists determined that it was not permanently affected or altered in any way, and the food regained its natural smells and taste when it was taken out of the alien craft. The other senses, sight, hearing, and touch, changed for the better. If a scientist wore glasses, he needed to remove them to be able to see. It was the same with hearing. All sound was crystal clear regardless of previous hearing abilities of the scientists. Touch was sensitive to the point of being erotic. The ship simply felt good. However, the scientists were not accustomed to feeling optimally good and healthy, and it took time, most never did, before they became comfortable with the invigorating sensation inside the ship's environment. Unfortunately, if they spent long periods in the craft, coming out was the worst kind of jet lag. The scientists became irritable, groggy, drained, and achy, and had to readjust to feeling lousy again. Ironically, that was the normal feeling of their bodies that they forgot about while in the ship. Although the senses were on high alert while in the ship, the description that was unanimous among those that entered the ship was that it was surreal. They had a dreamy state of mind, yet, they were energized and not at all sleepy while in the ship. On the flip side, much of that alertness turned into apprehension, and for some, nightmarish. The persistent feeling that something living, aliens, was present in the ship with them, behind them, around them, like wisps or shadows that never quite came into focus. It was unnerving for those that worked inside the craft. There was no doubt that they were not alone while in the ship. To compensate for the time distortion, the scientists posted two men outside the craft and had one of them enter the ship every few minutes, and announce the time to those inside. When the craft was first discovered, the scientists spent hours and sometimes days oblivious to the fact that even a single minute had passed. Working for long stretches of time without losing energy or focus was common, but it created problems for those with families. The interior of the craft was much larger than its physical exterior suggested. No one is sure that all the rooms and compartments on the ship have been discovered. Everyone who entered it came out with a different number. Even the same person comes out with a different count each time they leave the craft. Another problem they faced was leaving the ship with intelligible notes. Everything they wrote down ended up being a maze of half-written words and sentences that were void of any meaning once they exited the ship. The scientists attempted to take pictures of the instruments and other interior rooms of the ship, but were unsuccessful. When the film was developed, it was as if it had been exposed to light. So they tried different systems of shielding the camera from the unknown radiation. They enclosed the camera in various alloys, plastics and exotic cutting-edge ceramics in vain attempts to insulate the film. Nothing worked. There were scores of gadgets on the ship. Some have been taken out of the ship and experimented with, others, even though they are portable, could not be removed from the craft. An invisible force inside the craft kept the scientists from leaving the ship with certain alien items. No one ever figured out why, nor how to circumvent that force. Every alien gadget somehow knew what its purpose was. Unlike human gadgets like hammers, toasters, etc., which are static and only function correctly if at all with the help of a human, or an electrical outlet, alien objects appeared to have consciousness, were alive, and they perform duties independently and without any known power source like batteries, solar cells, or electrical cords, and operated indefinitely. The opening or doorway to the ship was another mystery. When a scientist approached the craft with the intention of entering it, an opening appeared instantly. If there was no intention by the scientist of entering the ship, nothing opened. The ship can be entered from any location, top, sides and from the bottom of the craft. Wherever a scientist approached the ship, that's where they entered. When an opening manifested, it led to the same central location, regardless of the point of entry. The craft was able to absorb several people into it at once. A feat that left many of the scientists spooked beyond comprehension. According to one testimony, if all the technicians who were analyzing the craft formed a circle around it and intended to enter it in mass, they all did. There are no doors, as we know and understand doors, only an opening that accommodates the size of the person or persons entering the ship. The ship appeared to work something like osmosis. The person desiring entry and standing next to the ship instantly found himself inside the ship. Yet, if there was no mental desire to enter or exit, the ship remained impregnable. No man-made machinery could break into the ship. Strange life forms inside the ship. Everything in the ship possessed unique personalities that were also capable, in the most bizarre ways, of conveying emotions to the scientists. The best description of these gadgets by the scientists was that they were like synthetic versions of insects and small animals. They lacked organic qualities in the respect that they didn't eat, drink, or eliminate, yet the gadgets didn't have static qualities of synthetic human-made materials. The alien gadgets squirmed, crawled, levitated, jumped, flew and walked. The size of the living gadgets ranged from a deer tick to a basketball, with the majority of the items fitting in the palm of the average man's hand. The scientists treated some gadgets as delightful toys, and occasionally fought over them like children, impatiently waiting their turn to inspect, explore, and be entertained by the gadgets. However, some of the alien thingamajigs turned out to be monsters. Many of the items seemed to be metallic, sturdy and unbelievably strong, and at the same time malleable, like soft putty. The ambiguity of the strange substance that the gadgets were made of confounded the research teams. The consensus was that the material from which the ship and its contents consisted of made a mockery of human physics. Alien gadgets didn't function like human machinery with the use of gears, motors, wheels, wiring, or even our most state-of-the-art microelectronics like nanotechnology. Nor did the gadgets function physiologically, with bone, blood and muscle, or like the plant and marine life either. It appeared that every molecule of whatever these things were made of acted in unison in the same manner that water molecules join together to create ocean waves. There are no human means available to dissect the alien gadgets. They are impervious to our inferior technology to penetrate and analyze. The alien things didn't have seams or edges to pry open, no organs or flesh to probe. They couldn't be weighed nor their contents measured. They appeared to be cast from one solid piece with no parts, except that they were not solid, as we know solid to be. One analogy describing alien material was malleable and solid, but temperature had nothing to do with either state, as it does with earth metals, liquids, and gases. Alien gadgets transitioned to four physical stages: solid, malleable, liquid and gas, without external heat variation. Change happened at the discretion of the alien gadget and not the human handler. Attempts to study the items were further blunted when X-ray failed to penetrate the alien material. There is no human means to understand what made those gadgets work other than paranormally. Nothing connected with the craft aged, wore out, or became obsolete. Rather, the things in the ship and the ship itself appeared to improve over time. The gadgets also seemed to learn the habits of the handlers. An example: if a hammer were an alien gadget, all one needed to do was use it once and from then on the hammer would repeat the action indefinitely, hitting the nail without the need to handle the hammer manually. The hammer would operate on its own, although someone had to hold the nail and pray that the hammer didn't miss. Alien technology, although perfect, is problematic when interfacing with inferior technology and understanding. The scientists discovered that controlling an alien item once it became activated was a dangerous proposition.